Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Barrick, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of August, Anno Domini 2017. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick up your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Steve is still in the process of setting up. He wasn't late by his own standards.
Gray said he clocked me in.
Okay, good. Steve believes he's not late as long as he gets to say, I'm Steve Ray. And so he's still setting up. But we're not on YouTube yet, but the stream is up. And, of course, we're live on the air. On Wednesday, Samsung took the wraps off its new flagship device, the Galaxy Note 8. Samsung changed everything about the Galaxy S line earlier this year, and those changes are all making the jump to the bigger Note model. You get an extra tall display with on-screen navigation buttons and slim bezels. The fingerprint reader has been moved to the back next to the camera components. There's also an iris scanner, a dedicated hardware button for Samsung's Bixby voice assistant, and compatibility with Samsung's Dex desktop dock. That's not that easy to say. I knew when I was writing it that those three D's were going to mess me up. So what is actually different? What?
Were enough for me. I shouldn't have done that while he was in the news.
So it is actually different from the Galaxy S8, which launched about 5 months ago. Well, first, it's slightly bigger. Well, the Galaxy S8 tops out at 6.2 inches. The Note 8 bumps up to 6.3 inches. On the back, there's a tenth of an inch is important. On the back, there's Samsung's first dual camera design, sharing a wide angle camera with a telephoto camera with 2x optical zoom. Both have optical image stabilization, something Samsung claims is a first. Samsung has a number of trick features of using the dual cameras, such as fine control over depth of field and simultaneously dual captures to take a whole scene wide angle shot at the same time as taking a close-up detailed shot. The Note 8 has a more squared off design, which leaves a bit more room internally for storage of the Note line's trademark S Pen stylus, which is, of course, another addition over the S8. Like the S8, the spec sheet will be split across territories. In the U.S., we'll be getting a Samsung-manufactured Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 SoC, a system on a chip. Internationally, the devices get the Samsung-manufactured Exynos 8895 SoC. The display resolution is the same as the S8, 2960 by 1440, for the 18.5:9 ratio. Aspect ratio OLED. There's a baseline of 6 gig of RAM. That's 2 gig more than the base model of the S8. 64 gig of storage. A micro SD slot. Thank you very much. Two rear cameras. One 12 megapixel wide angle camera and the other 12 megapixel telephoto camera with an 8 megapixel front facing camera too. Iris scanning is supported as an additional biometric option. The Note 8 has a 3300 milliamp hour battery, which, thanks to having to make room for the S Pen, is a downgrade from the S8 Plus's 3,500 milliamp hour battery. There's also wireless charging, Samsung Pay, a USB Type-C port, a heart rate monitor. Oh, and by the way, earphone jack. And the device has an IP68 water and dust ingress protection. While Google launched the Android 8.0 Oreo this week, and that operating system has been in developer and OEM preview for 5 months, the Note 8 is shipped with an old version of Android 7.1.1 Nougat with Samsung's TouchWiz skin on top. That's still better than the Galaxy S8 line, which is stuck in Android 7.0. In the U.S., the Note 8 will be available in two colors, Midnight Black and Orchid Gray. They will be on sale from September 15th, with pre-orders opening August 24th. On anyone buying before September 24th, we'll be able to choose a free extra, either a Gear 360 camera or a 128-gigabyte memory card and fast wireless charger. Pricing has not been revealed, but leaks put it in the $900 range. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Is Samsung Galaxy Note 8. Your choices are, I'm burning to get one. Get it? Looks interesting. Meh. Too expensive. And iPhone forever, baby. Right now we have 28 votes. And meh is a little more than half of you, followed by too expensive. Looks interesting. Three of you said iPhone forever, and nobody is burning to get one. But we know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right, under fascinating stuff, the first choice is the forums. The second forum down on the list is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item in poll discussions is 26 August 17, Samsung's Galaxy Note 8. There are only two of us who've had anything to say so far, so please join us there. And, of course, you can join us live, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. The event was pretty good. I have to say I was honestly pretty impressed by the, production values of the event. They've become real theater over the years, starting with Jobs, but they've become real theater, and so consequently, this was a multi-person, multi-camera, multi-projector, giant screens. It was amazing. There was a point, I think, where everyone was suddenly disappointed because a whole bunch of people came out with Note 8s, and I thought they were just going to give them to people in the audience, and they didn't. But other than that, it was a heck of an event, and you know, they brought out such and so to hype such and such, and somebody else to hype something else, and back and forth and back and forth. It was really a pretty amazing little event. As to how well the product will sell, I don't know. It certainly is a hefty little beast in terms of size. That's good for those of us who have poor eyesight and don't mind carrying this massive frickin' thing around.
It's got Samsung on it. I'm sure it will do fine, just like iPhones do.
I agree with you. I think it will do fine. People are not as loyal to Samsung as a brand as they are to Apple as a brand. They did a survey, and some ridiculously large number of Apple owners, iPhone owners, would never consider another phone, just an iPhone. And I don't know that that's true of anybody else. I have owned several Samsungs, but I lust after the Pixel, I have to say, the Pixel XL. And we'll see. Google's bringing out new Pixels in September, they say. So we'll see how that goes. But it's a pretty nice phone, but I got to be honest, it's a phone.
That's your problem. You're so old, you still use a phone as a phone.
Right. But even so, I mean, I use my phone to read the news and do the this and the that and the thing and the other, but it doesn't, you know, it's not about the device. It's about what the device will do for me, and it's not doing anything different. I mean, it's got Bixby, but I use Google Assistant. Right. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of who cares as to a lot of that stuff right now. Apple people are still excited about the hardware. You know, you take away the
earphone
jack. Oh, my
God, the screen is 2 millimeters thinner.
Right. Yeah, the thing is 2 millimeters thinner. There's no they like the fact that they took away the earphone plug. Because
there's still people upset about that.
Yeah, but most of them can now show you the bottom of the screen and say they got the new phone. Yeah. because there's no jack there. But so Apple people still kind of get excited about the newest hardware. Everybody else is like, yeah, maybe I don't need a new phone right now anyway. So.
And at $900, that's pretty expensive.
That's a lot. Remember that when the next iPhone comes out,
That's the point I was going to bring up. But most of the rumors are now saying the iPhone 8, which will be sort of the special 10th anniversary edition iPhone, is going to be in the $1,000 range. And so, is that for the base model with, 32 storage? You know, if you want the 512 storage, is that going to be a $1,500 phone?
Yep.
So the flagship phones that do so many things are in this price range.
Yep.
But in the Android market, you can still buy a cheap phone, $200-$300, and then, the disposable phones, the $100 Android phones, that make phone calls.
Right.
and it's interesting to see people are realizing now what phones cost because of the way the payments have changed. You're not doing the contracts. So the 2-year contract where you paid off the phone has been replaced with a 2-year payment plan where you pay off the phone.
Right.
But to the accountants, that's different.
Right.
And so now the companies are separating the cost of the phone versus the cost of your service. So the typical smartphone, you're paying $100 a month. Yeah, and about $50 of that is the phone, and about $50 of that is the service. But now that they're separating it, people are realizing, okay, $50 a month over 2 years, I'm paying $1,200 for this phone.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what you've been paying.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And the people whose contracts ran out, but they still were paying the $100 a month, you've paid your phone off a year ago, you're still giving the cell phone company $100 a month for the phone you've already paid off.
Right.
So that is kind of nice now that when your phone gets paid off, you can drop your bill.
Right.
But by then you'll want a new phone. So that's how they've rigged it.
Right. It's exactly right.
You want
right.
that new phone every 2 years.
Everybody wants the new phone, and if it only costs you $50 a month, that's a lot less painful than $900 for a phone.
Yeah.
So I get that.
So you look at that 2-year contract that used to cost you $2,500, you just didn't look at that part.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well, a lot of companies are doing that now. Netflix, $10 a month, that's not much. That's $120 a year.
That's right.
And, you look at it that way, okay, that's a little more expensive.
Right. Exactly right. But how else are you going to get the Defenders?
Yeah. And then, the new Inhuman series that's going to show on ABC.
Yeah.
The pilot, they're going to release in IMAX theaters in a week or two.
Right.
So there's a ton of them now. So one of the Indiana Jones movies just got re-released in the theaters. The Wrath of Khan is coming back for the 30th anniversary in a couple of weeks, and then the Inhumans movie is coming. So all the sci-fi geeks are all a Twitter. No, I'm sorry, that's a different program. All a flutter. Yeah, we're trying to plan trips, and we're gonna do we go in costume? Do we set up displays and the so
yes. How is that even a question?
One of the groups I'm in is there's sort of like two groups kind of arguing with each other. One group wants to go to Wrath of Khan, and the other group wants to go to Inhumans. And so I said, why can't we do both?
It's really no reason. Yeah. I don't understand that.
I don't think they're playing the same day either.
Right. And even if they are, there's two showings and two different days you could go. They're not all one-day events, are they?
Oh, one guy said, I saw the Wrath of Khan already. Well, we all have. It's been out for 30 years. We just all want to yell Khan at the screen.
Well, yes. It's going to become like a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
People are going to go sit there and do all the lines. And, of course, you get to see Ricardo Montalban's fake chest, but that's...
There wasn't much fake on his chest.
No, there really
wasn't.
A lot
of that was real.
Yeah, it really was. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. I have a question about how to stop mapping software like Google Maps or Waze, for example, on a cell phone from crashing. Here's the problem I have. I'm a driver right now for Uber and Lyft.
Good for you.
I have to take passengers around. They're in the back seat usually. And it's entered into the software where they want to go. And it pops up on my software, on my driver application, on my cell phone. So they don't even have to tell me where they're going. It just automatically pops up. And then I use either Google Maps or Waze in order to get turn-by-turn directions. And I depend on that heavily if I'm not familiar with the area.
Of course.
So when the mapping software freezes or crashes, suddenly it's not giving me directions anymore, and I have no idea where I'm going.
Right.
And it's embarrassing to turn around and say, excuse me, my software crashed. Could you tell me how to get there?
Right, so right.
My problem is, how could I stop these mapping softwares from crashing or freezing? And the only thing I could think of is buying a phone with a faster processor and more RAM, but I need your advice.
Well, that will certainly help. You're going to want... I don't know much about the Lyft or Uber software, but if you're running both of those at the same time, plus Google Maps and Waze and et cetera, you want a minimum of 4 gig, and probably 6 or 8 would not be amiss.
So one thing that can help is to shut down all of your other apps
right.
when you're doing the GPS.
But yeah, there's really, unless you've got something running in that machine, in that phone that is interfering, and of course, the only way we're going to tell that is to just stop doing everything else, as Steve said, and see what happens. But I think in the long run, I don't know, how much RAM do you have in your machine?
2 gigs.
No. There you go. That really is an issue. Google Maps wants most of 2 gig for itself. So does Waze. Probably so does Uber and Lyft. So you're going to want at least 6 gig machine and phone, and maybe 8.
Okay. Now,
sorry.
A critical question then. Is it possible to add RAM, or do I need to buy a new phone?
I don't know of a phone that lets you add RAM.
You might be better off buying a standalone GPS for $100 or so.
That's true. Right now, was it Woot today who had one?
Not today's a Chromebook.
Well, there's other things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of electronics and that computers. I could have sworn.
Oh yeah, it was a Garmin watch.
Yeah, yesterday was the Garmin thing.
Yeah. Use your Garmin watch for GPS instruction right. while you're driving.
Right.
Well, this was an aviation watch. I guess you use it while you're flying.
Yeah, there you go. That'll work. Where am I? Oh, mountain. What? yeah, I'm sorry. Steve is right. We got to take a break. Steve is right. Having a standalone GPS might be the solution to your problem.
Okay, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, because like Steve says, for $100 you're there.
There's a refurbished one for $50.
Yeah, if for $100, $50 you're there and you're done. Certainly cheaper than a new phone.
Although it is an excuse to get a new phone.
Exactly.
So if you needed one of those, that's okay.
Right. And God knows, of course, you're making so much money on Uber and Lyft that buying a new phone won't really be a problem.
Oh, yeah, I'm making tons of money doing that.
Well, then it becomes a business expense you can deduct.
That's true.
Just don't use it for personal use, just
right.
business use.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have fun. That's exactly what he needs to do. So, listen, we're going to take a moment to gather ourselves and figure out where we are. And but don't go anywhere, because we've got a lot more people on the line and a lot more of your calls on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Steve Ray. It's Mike Oden. It's me, Nick Francesco. It's 21 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Rochester, New York on the Brian on the Lion. What's up, Brian?
I'm speaking better than you are. Does that count?
Clearly you are.
I got a question for you, which is a straight computer question.
Uh-oh.
No phones.
Wow.
Nothing about phones. How about that?
Excellent.
Something different. Now, I run a desktop system on Windows 10, and I got an HP 8600, combination scanner, printer, which has worked beautifully for a long time.
Uh-huh.
On Thursday, my wife got an email from one of the charity things that she works with, their newsletter. had lots of pictures, lots of color and pictures.
Yeah.
He printed it. Printed a second copy so he could give one to somebody else. And a third copy went to printed all the way through. Now, it was 12 pages of dense graphics. And this third one, it hung up on page 12. I can't get it out of the queue. It won't delete. It says, we've been deleting since Thursday afternoon. And it still isn't gone. When it says, you know, how much has been done, it says 12 pages out of 12. 444 bytes, whatever, and they're all printed, but the thing is still hung up, and I can't get it out of my queue. What did I do wrong?
Well, you printed something.
You printed too much. You overworked it. It's been tired. It was tired.
It's tired, the poor thing.
It fried the entire machine. I understand.
Here's what you do. Do you own a sledgehammer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
That was my next question.
Yeah, yeah. The first thing, I am assuming you have turned the printer off.
And on, and recycled both.
Okay, now what you need to do is go to your wife's computer, whichever one printed the newsletter, and look in its queue.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I've done that.
And it's not there either?
It's in Lynn's account. And I've gone to that queue, and it says the same thing, the exact same.
And there's no removal button or anything like
that? Yeah, yeah. It says to go in the settings or go in, here it is, in the HP 8600 printer queue, document name, status deleting, owner Lynn, pages 12 of 12, size 14.4 megabytes out of 14.4 megabytes submitted. Deleting was submitted on Thursday afternoon, and port WSD, standard port. And it's still, if I try and delete it or cancel it, you sure you want to cancel? Yeah. And nothing changes.
And nothing changes. All right. What you might have to do, well, this is Windows 10. So you've already done a cancel of the print job in the actual queue. So
right.
What you might need to do is actually stop the queue.
Okay.
Itself. So what you do is you right-click the start button and click run. And then type services.msc for Microsoft Control.
All right. And what was the first part of it?
Services.
Services.
Yeah. And that opens, believe it or not, the services panel. Look for print spooler. Well, you might have to scroll down to find it.
Find it.
Right-click it and select stop.
Windows cannot find services.msc.
Services, S-E-R-V-I-C-E-S.
Yeah, dot MSD.
MSC, Microsoft MSC. Control.
Ah, I don't see that's what... A wonderful.
Okay, so then you scroll down and
so
find.
Then I look for the spooler.
Find print spooler. Again, you might have to scroll down to see it.
Right.
Click stop. Don't close that window. Leave the services window open. Now you need to go to the printers directory. And delete any files that might be inside that.
Which is the actual job
file
waiting.
Job itself, huh?
Yeah. Right. So to do that, you will launch. Now, we're not going to sit while you do that, but you would launch File Explorer, and Steve's going to put it up on the list. You launch File Explorer, click the address bar, and it's C:\Windows\System32\Spool\Printers.
And don't bother, Steve. I've memorized all that.
Yeah,
there you go. Not a problem. Like I said, Steve's going to put a link to this on the website. And then you just click and drag to highlight all the files that are left in there, delete them, and now you can go back to the services window and restart the print spooler, which you right click and click start instead of stop. Yeah. Duh. And that should do it.
Oh, there it is, Print Spooler. Found it finally.
There you go.
I got that far.
Okay.
I'll download. I can't print Steve's stuff. I'll have to do it off the screen.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
All right, I'll give it a try.
All right, well, you might be able to print it from a different printer.
Well, we only have
excuse
one.
Excuse me, a different computer.
Different computer.
Right? Oh. You have multiple computers hooked up to the same printer, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So the other computer should still be able to print, assuming that the Q is actually on that printer and not in the on Lynn's computer, not in the print queue printer itself. Oh, make a sentence out of that, for God's sake.
If it doesn't work, I'll call you next week.
All right. Or any other time, you know that.
Sometimes just deleting the print whole print queue in the printer's folder sometimes works, but oftentimes it won't delete the queue if there's a job pending.
Right.
Right. Well, that's what it kind of sounds
like. That's why stopping the spool services usually fixes it.
Right. All right?
No, it's pretty fixable, besides the slow shimmer.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Have fun.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah. Some things are a little more arcane than others, I must say, but Windows is doing a fairly better job, let's say, of making it possible to do these things. Windows 10, it's a lot easier in Windows 10. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Frederick from Batavia, New York. Hi, Frederick, what's up?
Oh, that's my alias. I'm also known as Patrick from Batavia.
Oh, Patrick, sorry. My fault. What's up?
Well, Nick, I hope you got opportunity here to make me look like a genius before my wife gets home.
We don't do miracles, Patrick. We just do computer help. What's up?
I know. Well, I'm wondering if this is a feature or an option with Windows 10, but instead of restarting, bringing up the desktop, when I restart her computer, it comes up with the window tiles spread across the entire screen and some icons along the left side.
It's full screen mode, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Or tablet mode.
It could be tablet mode. Are you still there? I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right, so here's the deal. As Steve said, Windows has multiple modes. And one of them is tablet mode, which if you really look at the screen, it kind of looks like what you would expect the tablet to look like, right, with the tiles and a couple of...
Right, yeah.
And that's all there is, right. So you're kind of stuck in tablet mode, and there is a way to get out of it. Like I said, Steve will...
I'm trying to find if there was a key combination to throw you in there in the first place.
Yeah, what happens, this is my wife's computer, and she, as I've mentioned before, is blind. And may have accidentally hit a couple keys that she didn't intend to.
Right. So
another possibility, and this is kind of way off of your area, but her software that she has did an update today, and they might have put a major blip on it. In which case, they'll probably fix it up by Monday. But I figured I'd ask you if this is an option. It sounds like you do know that this is an option that it could come up in.
Yeah, it's in the system settings to turn on tablet mode.
Right, so you go into the system settings, which you can do that by clicking on the start button, and then there's the little gear. And,
that's the settings.
Okay, system. Go into the system settings, and one of the choices down the left is tablet mode. And you can turn that off. Hello?
Yeah, I found tablet mode.
Yeah. Make sure that's off, and when you sign in, there's a choice under that for when I sign in, remember what I used last. And then below that, there's one that says when the device automatically switches tablet mode on or off, have it always ask me before switching.
Okay, always ask me before switching, right.
Right. So make sure those are set, and it should be then okay.
That was one of the biggest annoyances in Windows 8 is that tablet mode was on all the time because everyone had a touchscreen, right?
Right.
No, they didn't.
Okay, to get out of tablet mode now, I just hit escape. I mean, out of the system thing.
Once you've done that, you just close the window. In the upper right there, the X.
It came back. Yes. Do I have to reset it for that to take place?
You shouldn't have to.
The systems. It went back to the same screen. Let me go back to settings again and see, was there maybe a save I should have done?
I don't remember one.
It should just turn off tablet mode as soon as you hit the off button.
Yeah, it's showing on. You know, maybe I'll reset and see if that helps.
Yeah, there is a... Oh, that was not right. A key combination... Excuse me. I beg your pardon. I don't even remember using that. So, I'm not sure...
You know, why not just reset it, you know?
Well, that should work. That should work. Yeah. Obviously, that should work. But there should be a key combination.
This? I'll do this, and if I'm not happy, I'll call you back in 20 minutes.
Yeah, Windows key and 1 does something with tablet mode, but I really don't remember what.
Yeah,
it might just bring up the choice.
She accidentally did a couple keystrokes that she didn't intend to, but you definitely put me in the right area with this tablet mode, and I think this is going to take care of itself. I'll let you go, and probably about time to go to the news.
Perfect. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. We'll see you.
Have fun. Yeah, one of the big issues, of course, has always been the tiny changes that Microsoft makes in terms of what we use every day. Now, obviously, this is a huge change when you get stuck in it.
Yeah.
But you know, in terms of actual use, most people will never activate tablet mode
unless they're on a tablet where it's on already.
Right. Yeah. There's another way to get to it, which is, of course, you can open up the Action Center on a touchscreen. You swipe in from the right, and that opens that little side. Dark gray bar, that's called the Action Center.
Win key and the A bring up the Action Center.
Right, and Win key and A do the same thing. And theoretically, tablet mode, if it's on, will be in that, down across the bottom, one of the little icon boxes across the bottom. Kind of a button, and that'll open that up. So it's easy to do that as well. But yeah, it's a really nice feature, I guess.
If you have a touchscreen.
Well, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if A, you have a touchscreen, or B, you have one of those laptops that does a 360 with the screen, right?
Right,
you can fold the screen around the back.
And become a tablet. Yeah.
Right, and turn it into a tablet. Then, theoretically, at that point, Windows is supposed to be smart enough to automatically go into tablet mode and then come out of it again when you put it back in laptop mode. I've never actually seen that happen, but it's supposed to. I actually have a laptop that does that, and at least the last time I bothered to try it, it did not do that. But it's conceptually a lovely idea, and I'm sure that, you know, as with everything Microsoft, they'll get it right at some later iteration, and then tout it as a new thing they're showing to the whole world. But yeah, it's a nice, it truly, you know, I laugh about it. Okay. Because it's Microsoft. We make fun of them because they should be better than they are. But, it truly is a very nice feature. The ability to just turn, if you've got the device that will turn itself into a laptop, into a tablet, and then automatically poof, you're in tablet mode. So now you can do things as if it were a real tablet. Of course, not many of us spend a lot of time lugging a 15-inch tablet around. But I suppose it's nice that it's doable. My my laptop is I want to say it's a 14-inch laptop. So even that's a little large to be considered a laptop. But
I remember a 20-inch laptop.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them. Yeah. Yeah. I've been saying this for years, but I have to say it again. It costs you at least $300 to $400 over a desktop of the same capability to buy a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
If you're never going to take it anywhere, why in the heck did you buy a laptop? Are you so rich that $300 or $400 doesn't mean anything to you? I've never understood that. You get a bigger monitor. If you've got $300 or $400 to waste, you can add more RAM and a bigger processor, a faster processor, and a bigger hard drive, and you get twice as much machine for the same amount of money.
And then get a tablet.
And then get a tablet
for a couple hundred dollars. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Take that couple hundred dollars, get a tablet, Then you have
or
the nice
Chromebook.
Yeah,
if you got to carry something around,
you have a nice big, you know, big screen desk, powerful desktop at home, and you've got, you know, the small something to carry with you.
Yep. All right. All right. Once again, we have to calm down. We'll calm down, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a lot more of your phone calls and just way more nonsense on the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites. I'm a truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, here's a lovely item. On Monday, as the moon slowly crept its way across the sun, Google took the opportunity to host an Eclipse-themed Android 8.0 launch event in New York City. Along with Eclipse glasses, and all the nerds were inside watching the event, not outside watching the event. And a simulcast of NASA's Eclipse live stream, because it's always better on screen rather than actually in real life. Android O finally got its full name, Android 8.0 Oreo. Like Kit Kat before it, Android's alphabetical snack theme code names have gone commercial and partnered with an actual snack producer, adopting Nabisco's trademarked Oreo as the name for this release. The event also came with the traditional statue unveiling a superhero Android Oreo. Android 8.0 Oreo is shipping out across all the usual distribution methods. The Android open source project is getting the 8.0 code drop. Over-the-air updates begin to roll out soon to the Pixel, Pixel XL, Nexus X5, Nexus 6P, Nexus Player, and Pixel C. And system images should be up on developers.google.com soon. Any device enrolled in the Android beta program will also be upgraded to these final builds. Thanks to several developer preview releases, we mostly know what's in 8.0 Oreo. The update brings a big revamp of the notification panel with new layouts, colors, and features like snoozing. Google is clamping down on background apps for more consistent performance and better battery life. There are new updatable emoji, a faster startup time, all new settings, and plenty of security enhancements, including the new Google Play Protect malware system. Or actually, anti-malware system. It's not a malware system as such. Most importantly, Android 8.0 Oreo brings Project Treble to new devices. There's Treble right here in River City, a modularization of the OS away from the hardware, which should make it easier to develop and roll out new Android updates. If you didn't buy a Google-branded Android phone, you're going to be stuck waiting. 2017 flagships for major OEMs like the Galaxy S8 and LG G6 usually take about 6 months to update to a new version. For 2016 flagships, you'll be waiting even longer than that, usually something like 8 months to a year. For everyone else, you'll get Android 8.0 Oreo when you throw your existing smartphone out and buy a new one. So are you hot for Android One? Android Oreo? Cheese and crackers.
No, Oreos.
Oreo. Give us a call. Save me from myself. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0414.
Okay, I want to know who paid who for the licensing. Did Google pay
Nabisco?
Yeah.
Probably.
No, I'm sure it's Google paying Nabisco. Yeah, Nabisco owns the intellectual property on this one. So if you're going to use Oreo, you're going to pay them.
Well, there's also the possibility that Nabisco paid Google just for like the advertisement.
Maybe, but it's unlikely. I'm sure that Google was stuck with an O name. I'm not sure. I guess Orange Marmalade or Ovaltine. That's a trademark name too.
There was a Ozark pudding. Was bandied about for a while.
Right.
Or Oil Ball.
No. I don't even care what it is, no.
No, there's an Italian dessert that sounds like Oil Ball.
No.
That you should know.
Those are
recent. Yeah.
I don't know it. We're backwoods Italians.
Oli Ball. No, I'm sorry, not Italian. It's Dutch.
Okay.
It's close. Next Italy,
so
right?
Somewhere over in that European side of things.
Europe,
over there.
Right?
We don't know what.
Yeah, the EU. It's all together now.
It's all the EU now, right? As long as it's not British, it's EU.
This is not Food Bites.
You're right. Yeah. Exactly. Send in your recipes for Olibol. Olibol. It is. Oh, it's some sort of sugared pastry thing.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. At any rate, the
Dutch donuts, it's sometimes called.
It's Dutch donuts, sure. But the lovely thing about Google is they keep improving Android, and they're doing a very, very charming, very lovely.
The studio's falling apart.
Right in front of us. All righty then. Very nice. Very nice. Sorry for those of you who are listening through headphones. That may have been a little loud.
That looks like it's been here for the whole 40 years, too.
No, it used to be up there, and then it was on those things, and now it's not anymore, so that's all right, too. But Android's been doing, Google's been doing a really nice job of updating Android fairly regularly. The real problem is that most of us don't get those updates. And that's why I'm looking very seriously at a Pixel phone. Google's theoretically bringing out a new version of the Pixel this fall. So I'm looking very carefully at that because I'm at least one, if not two, versions behind right now. And it's, you know, the problem is that when Google puts out a new version of Android, in my case, Samsung has to get their hands on it and screw around with it for a couple of months, or in Samsung's case, 6 or 8 months, and then Verizon has to have their say, and then I finally get it. Well, by that point, they're halfway to the next release, and you know, if there were some serious security issues that were being fixed, I'm vulnerable for all that time, and I don't like it. It's really about, for me, it's about the security issues. Now, one of the nice things that this version of Android has something called Project Treble, like I said, and that is Google's way of separating the hardware portion from the software portion. So now we're looking more at what happens in computers, where you have drivers that attach the more generic operating system to the specific hardware. So having that and being able to say, all right, we're updating the operating system without having to worry about the drivers, then that means updates can happen in a much more timely manner. Nobody else has to get their hands on the thing and do it in their own sweet time. He subtly hinted that he was upset about it. So it's a really nice feature. They wish they had done it 2 years ago or 4 years ago, but it's a really nice feature, and I'm glad that they're finally doing it. But if you have a Pixel phone, or like we said, the Nexus 6P or whatever, then you will get updated to the latest version quite quickly. But it's mostly those people who are getting their phones directly from Google. Who will benefit most immediately from this? So it's a pretty nice. It looks like a pretty nice set of updates. Things are faster. Things are smaller. I really like the fact that it limits what runs in the background, so that the phone doesn't bog down if you've got some stupid thing running in the background that you forgot about. So I really do like what they've done.
So that might even depending on what OS. Carl was running on his phone, you know, causing the maps to crash.
Carl from Batstown, yeah.
It might help upgrading to Oreo.
That's not up to him, unfortunately.
Yeah, he can, yeah, depending on the model.
On a 2-gig machine, maybe not.
It may not upgrade, yeah.
Right. And, of course, that's the other part of the problem. We don't think we need more phone than we need, for most of us at least, until we need it.
Yeah.
And then we're stuck with the phone we've got. So whereas we try to buy more computer than we think we're going to need, so it'll last us longer, we don't think to do that with our phones. And
partly,
you know,
because we do replace them more often.
Right.
But you're always running, you know, buy double the storage you think you need, because you're going to take more photos and need it.
Well, and that's the big thing, of course. Yep. The thing I don't like about so many phones is they don't have upgradable storage.
Right.
I would love to have upgradable RAM, of course. Nobody has that. But having a phone without an SD card is a real issue. Now, as you know, Google's always saying, well, your stuff goes up into the cloud. It goes up into Photos. Well, yeah, but that means every time I want to look at a photo, I'm using my data.
Right.
And everybody's got unlimited data now. I get that. Fine. But
that can be expensive to buy the unlimited packages.
It's expensive to buy the unlimited packages. And as we all know, if you go over X gig, and X is different for every carrier, they slow you down.
Yeah.
I don't want to be slowed down looking through my photos. If I can put 256 gig of photos on my phone, that should be my right. That should be something I'm allowed to do. But it saves them a penny to take out the micro SD reader. And so, you know, when you sell a million phones, pennies add up.
Yep. With all the 10th anniversary iPhone stories going around, people are pulling out their original 2007 iPhone. It had 4 gigs of storage in it.
Yep.
And that was a lot.
And most people never used that much before they upgraded to the next phone.
Today, most of the phones are 32 gig minimum.
Right.
And 128 gig, 256, some of them, 512. And that's laptop storage.
That is laptop storage.
And partly because a lot of people use their phone as their tablet, laptop, portable computer.
Well, I'm telling you, last semester when I was teaching, spring semester, when I was teaching at RIT, half my students came to class with nothing but their phones.
Yeah.
They took notes on their phones. They took pictures of the stuff I wrote on the screen on their phones. They followed along with the slides that they could download on their phones. They didn't need anything more than their phone. Now, that also meant that when I taught a late afternoon class, there were 32 kids crowding around two wall plugs.
Yeah.
Trying to charge all at the same time. But one kid got smart. He brought in a power bar.
And then did he charge the other students to plug in?
He wasn't that smart. But he was smart enough to bring a power bar.
Yeah, for a buck, you can plug into my power bar.
That's right. That's, you know, that's cheap at half that price. So, I had one kid come up and say, I notice you don't use the plug on your podium. Do you mind if I plug into it? I thought, finally, somebody sitting in the front of the classroom.
Yeah.
Power! Must have power!
Wait, every time I go up into the classroom, I think I'm in church.
Yeah.
Everybody's sitting in the back.
I've been to lectures and presentations where the speaker won't start until everyone moves in the front.
Yep.
In fact, we were at a convention and the rest of our group were all trying to figure out where to eat, so that takes an hour.
Yeah.
So I ducked into the Anthony Daniels presentation, who played C-3PO.
Yep.
I was sitting in the back because I knew, eventually, the rest of the group was going to say, come where to eat. He grabbed me and put me on stage because I was sitting in the back row. And then, 20 minutes later, my wife, peeks her head in the only thing worse than sitting in the back row was coming late.
Yes, which you did both.
No, I was early. Oh. But my wife peeked her head in the door to get me to go eat, and he races right down to her. And who are you? What are you doing coming late? And she didn't recognize him. Short little British guy.
Right.
And
wasn't gold half servos.
And so he goes, well, she said, I'm looking for my husband. And he goes, well, where is he? And he's up on stage. So we beat a hasty retreat, but it was very interesting. Oh, and you heard what he said to Alan Tudyk about playing K2SO?
No.
It's a vulgarity we can't use on the air.
Yeah.
Because Alan didn't have to get in a suit. It was all done with motion capture.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so you know, Anthony's asking Alan, were you in a suit or was it all motion capture? Well, it was motion capture. F you.
Exactly.
Poor
well,
Anthony's
he
been
was
stuck
wearing
in that
a suit, but it was one of those polka dots.
Polka dots
suits.
With tennis ball, you know, little ping pong balls on it. Yeah. Poor Anthony's been stuck in that suit for 30 years. Yeah,
exactly. All right, we have to take a break, right? We don't have time for another caller. All right. Yeah. We do have a couple people on the line. Please stay on the line. We won't be taking your calls just yet because we have to
we're painfully close to a break.
We're painfully close to a break. You don't know how much it hurts us.
It's a hard out.
To leave you. It is a hard out, and that's why.
Yeah.
You don't have any idea how painful it is for us to take just a minute away from you. It gives us agita at the very least, and sometimes actual grief. Actual grief, people. But we are going to take a short intermission. We'll be back. We'll have Joe from Cheektowaga. Cheektowaga and a couple of other places. And we'll be back shortly with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running, some days longer than others, computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And yes, Dave Enright is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. But luckily, we have Joe from...
Cheektowaga, New York.
There you go. He knows his cues. What's up, Joe?
Well, I'd like to provide a few tips for Carl there with the phone that, just keeps on freezing on him.
Yep.
There's a couple things you can do without doing anything radical, which is, like, if you go into the settings, into apps, you'll see several screenfuls that you can swipe left and right with that is, like, running apps and on SD card and all that. You can go to the running apps screen and go into each one and stop the apps he doesn't want running. That'll free up some RAM.
Right.
You can also go into individual apps that are part of his OS, that came with his device.
Yeah.
And disable a lot of them.
Yeah,
some of them
not all,
disabled,
but a lot, yeah.
But, you know, anything you don't want running, you can usually go in and tap on the disable button, and it will disable it in your system. Therefore, it'll still take up your storage, but it won't take up your RAM.
Right.
If he wants to go to the step of rooting his phone, I consider this the much easier route, but rooting usually voids your warranty. We'll start with that.
Yeah.
But if you root your phone, which I would recommend going to xda-developers.com, that is the premier site of how to root all sorts of devices, and it's a very trusted site.
Right.
So you're not going to mess up your phone by putting malware on it. If you root your phone, there are several apps in the Play Store. I use Startup Manager, which will ask for root permissions, and then it will present you a list of things that start at boot. If you've never gone through the exercise, you may be very surprised at all the things that are started automatically.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. My rule of thumb is if I don't understand it, I don't disable it. Otherwise, my phone might not boot. Or
right.
It might boot, but it won't finish booting, and I'll have to do a factory reset on it anyway, which you're back to square one. But
right.
many of these things, you just tap on a button. You say, don't start when booting, don't start when booting, don't start when booting. So hopefully that'll free up enough RAM to hold both his Uber app and Maps.
Right. Right. And that's part of the issue. Both of those are large. Maps in particular, very hungry. So even doing all of that, he may find that 2 gigs, what with the operating system and everything else, all the hooks and blah, blah, blah that are living in RAM, may not be enough to run both of those apps. I don't know what the Uber app will do or the Lyft app will do.
Shouldn't it be Luger?
Luger is the Linux user group of Rochester and a very old handgun. But the basic whatever I was trying to say. Oh, you may not be able to fit the Lyft, the Uber, the Waze, and the Google Maps in any combination into only 2 gig.
That is true. I'm just trying to give them a way to maybe explore this without having to spend any additional money.
Right. And the thing I love about all of that is if you buy a new phone, you still have the old phone, and you can root it and turn it into not a phone, but as I like to call them, an iPod, an Android iPod.
Oh, yes.
And so you don't even have to do anything else to them. They'll just root them and go.
True. If you don't trade in your old phone, you could use one as your GPS and navigator, and the other one as your Waze and Lyft and app, Uber app phone.
Exactly. Although, right.
I've never tried that. I wonder if Uber and Lyft have integration into the phone. In other words, okay, once they know where they're going, will they call or the Android word for it is send an intent.
Right.
They send an intent of where you need to navigate.
Right.
That would be ultra cool if it's that well integrated.
Yeah, I really would, and I don't know that. I'm with you, I don't run either. But if it doesn't, then having that second device that's actually your navigation thing would be pretty cool, actually. All right.
What the heck? Get a Note 8. Why don't you? It's brand new, right?
Yeah. That's exactly right, and it's large enough to see from the back seat, too. All right, Joe, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Yep, have fun. Yeah, there's lots of options, and of course, nowadays, you know, many of us did not turn in our old phones because it just wasn't worth it, so we have a couple of old somethings in a drawer somewhere. So learning to root that and turn it into whatever you want it to be is not necessarily a bad thing and may, in fact, be fairly easy to do with just a little bit of expertise, help with somebody like XDA developers or any one of those sorts of things.
Although if you do it wrong, you can brick your phone, so it's completely unusable.
Well, and that's why you don't do it with your real phone.
Yeah.
Right, right. If you're gonna start to experiment and play, play with a phone that isn't an actual phone anymore. And then I did that with one, my first one. It was an old piece of junk, and I rooted it badly. Well, in those days, to be fair to myself, rooting in general was a bad idea. But I did it wrong, and I now have this little brick that sits around to remind me that you can do things wrong. So here's an interesting item. Apple is building a $1.375 billion, with a B, dollar data center near Des Moines, Iowa, after having secured more than $200 million in tax credits from the local government. Congratulations, Iowans. You're buying Apple to come into your area. The Iowa Economic Development Authority, the IEDA, says that Apple will soon purchase 2,000 acres of land in Waukee, a fast-growing suburb of Des Moines. That land will hold 2 data centers that will serve North American users of iMessage, Siri, the App Store, and other Apple services. The data center will support 157 jobs, paying $7.8 million in wages, according to IEDA. The facilities will run entirely on renewable energy, as do other Apple data centers. Wind energy is big in the Hawkeye State. So as a sweetener for the deal, Apple will get a rebate of $19.6 million in state sales taxes and a $188 million break on property taxes from Waukee.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so if you're sending your kids to school in Waukee, that's on you now. It amounts to a 71% abatement on property taxes over 20 years. Apple will spend $110 million to acquire and prepare the land and their billion-dollar tax breaks. They will then spend about $620 million on construction, about another $600 million on computer equipment, and $45 million on other equipment. Facebook, Google, and Microsoft all maintain data centers in Iowa already. In addition to generous tax breaks, the state offers cropland that can be taken out of the mouths of our children and developed into something else. High-speed fiber optics. Oh, hey, Rochester, listen. Other places offer high-speed fiber optics, and people are bringing jobs there. There's a surprise. Inexpensive wind-generated electricity and relative safety from natural disasters. My heart does go out to all my friends and all of our listeners in the path of Harvey all across Texas right now, I think, is where it still is. And we hope you all stay safe. The Apple deal is strictly tax breaks, unlike a controversial deal for Foxconn, currently being debated in Wisconsin. That deal, which has not been approved yet by the legislature, promises Foxconn as much as $2.8 billion with a B dollars in cash payments from Wisconsin taxpayers. Oh, suddenly the Apple deal's looking pretty good in return for building a liquid crystal display plant. So are you happy that Siri's getting closer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, Apple already has data centers in Oregon, North Carolina, California, and Nevada. They're apparently doubling the size of the data center in North Carolina. And while it does generate lots of construction jobs to begin with, there's actually very few people working there once it's done.
Yeah, most of that stuff is automated. You're going to get a couple of...
It's giant hard drives spinning and storing data. There's, you know, a couple of guys to swap out a drive when it dies.
That's about right.
Don't need that many people.
Not a particularly hard job, not a particularly high-paying job.
Yeah.
So that's you know, you might say, oh, there's so many jobs. No, really not. Not so much. If you've ever been in a data center, not so much. All right, our next caller. You ready? Our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Whoa, Dave, whatever that is, stop doing it.
Yeah, it's Steve from Greece.
Steve, what's up?
You guys know me. I'm sorry.
Dave, Patrick, I don't care, whatever we'll call you.
Call me what you like. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Right.
So I called last week about a Samsung S7 that wasn't sent text. You suggested I switch to the Google text instead of the Samsung.
Right.
I did actually send a couple texts, but I'm only through the Google was able to get like 20% of my texts through. So I spent half an hour on the phone with Track Phone, 4 hours on the phone with Samsung, and everyone was very polite and very helpful. Bottom line is they wanted me to do a factory reset. I've done that, and I still can't send texts.
Wow. Yeah, I did not think to ask you what phone you had last week. Go ahead.
And you're sure that you have a text plan on your cell service?
Yeah, so that was one of the things that Track Phone tracked for me. Yes, yes, I've got like 1,100 texts left to send.
Yeah. Track Phone, one of the issues, I work with a company who's main product does a lot of texting. And people with Track Phones often do not get those texts. We send out literally thousands upon thousands a day. And the only people who ever complain about not getting them have Track Phones.
But my problem is I can't send them. I can actually receive them.
Oh.
And it was working, and suddenly it stopped working.
And even after changing to the Google...
Right. When I changed to this Google app, I thought everything was fixed because I was able to send a text, and then the next text was not sent, and the text after that was not sent. And so I spent all the time on the phone with... And I got a little bit... both Track Phone and Samsung were very polite and spent a lot of time with me. I've done a factory, go back to original. I heard you guys talking about rooting. So I'm going to call, see if I can get it. I mean, that was a very expensive phone. What they'll do for me if I end up having to trash this phone or something to get text, should I root it?
Well, I don't know that that's going to help. I mean, it depends on where the problem is, right? If the problem actually is one of the apps in your phone, then rooting it might, in fact, do it. But if you've done a factory reset, and when you did the factory reset, you then had to reload all your apps, correct?
Yes, but I backed them up until most of them reloaded themselves.
Right. And have you tried going back to the other messaging, the Samsung messaging software?
I did. I went back to Samsung because that's what I was using originally. I haven't gone back to try Google again.
I would, and see if that is now fixed. The what I would suggest is that you get TrackPhone to send you another phone.
Yeah, if I can do it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I think the issue is something hardware related.
I agree.
One thing that I just thought of, that you, when you restored your apps, you might have restored the problem.
Yeah.
Do a factory reset, and then try texting from the built-in app before you do anything else.
Okay.
Because maybe it's one of your other apps is conflicting.
All right, I see what you're saying.
Right. So if you want to do some detective work, that's the way to do it. Grab each one of your apps. Well, the thing I always suggest to everybody is every once in a while, and now is a good time to do it because I'm talking about it, look through your phone, and any app that you don't use, just delete it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what happens if, 4 years from now I move to Colorado and I want to know who that my rep is in Colorado? I should keep the Who's Your Rep app. No, you don't. You can always download it again 4 years from now when you move to Colorado.
Yep.
So really, get rid of the apps that you're not using. Free up some space on your phone. If there is anything conflicting, it will then go away. I do think it is possible you have a conflict somewhere. Some app you don't even remember using or downloading to play with is interfering with your ability to receive texts. Or it is possible, certainly, that you are blocking all texts somehow.
Right. But again, I can't send them. I can receive them.
Right. Yeah, right. So anyway, it may be that something is blocking your sending.
Right.
So I would suggest, what Steve just said is reset your phone again. What the hell? You've done it once already. Reset your phone and, try the actual text, get a couple people lined up, reset your phone, send them a message saying, go ahead, text me, and see what you get.
Yep.
If that works, then add an app, ask them to send you another text, add an app, ask them to send you. I'm sorry, but, right?
You're going to need a lot of friends.
or just a couple of really, 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 really good ones. Don't call me, Alfie. But, yeah, so definitely those are the things that I would try.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
And by the way, happy birthday next week.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
We all have our birthdays this month, Steve.
Next month.
Next
you realize next weekend is Labor Day weekend already?
Next, what he's doing is saying happy birthday to Soundbites.
Yeah.
Which is our birthday is next week. The show's birthday is next week. But Steve and Dave and I all have birthdays. Michael, when's your birthday?
25th of June.
June! So you had yours a while ago. Happy birthday, happy belated birthday. We're all September babies. Dave, Steve, Soundbites, and I are all September babies. We're going to take a little relaxation here. Don't go away. We've got a lot more phone calls, a lot more craziness, a lot more news, a lot more Steve Ray, a lot more Michael Oden, a lot more Nick Francesco, and a lot more you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Oh, yes, that is Soundbites. And we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Rick from Irondequoit on the line. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. We know it's fairly easy to install, download an app on a cell phone.
Yep.
But I'm having a heck of a time putting an app on my desktop, or is it not possible? Specifically Verizon Wireless, however, any app would do. How do I do that?
You don't.
In general, your apps have to live in the right folder. On Windows, it's the program folder. On the Mac, it's
well,
the
now,
application
wait a minute.
Folder.
Let me back up a step. Oh. Are you trying to put a phone app on your desktop?
A what app did you say?
A phone app.
No. Verizon Wireless, for instance.
And that comes out of the app, out of the Windows Store?
I don't really know. Tell me. I'm clueless there.
You have to get your apps generally from a store or from a website.
I'm trying to go to Google Play and install that. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and that is a phone app.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Google Play is for phone apps.
Of course.
What operating system is your computer running?
7.
So you'd have to go to the Windows Store for Windows apps. Or many websites let you download apps directly on that website. But you would have to then download the Windows version, not the Android version or the iOS version.
Windows Store to download apps.
Right.
Okay.
Now, you can also, let me complicate things for you. If you use Google Chrome, you can add extensions, which work sometimes like an app, but only in the browser. But I don't know that, and I'm looking right now, I don't know that there is one for Verizon anything.
Okay.
Verizon does have a Windows app in the Windows Store. It says it only works on Windows 8 and 10, but that may be because Windows 7 has been long discontinued.
Right.
But you can try it and see.
Windows Store. I have my desktop opened up. Where might I find Windows Store, please?
There should be an icon for it somewhere.
Not in Windows 7.
That's right. That store didn't come out until Windows 8.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Yep. You can try going to the Windows Store directly on the web browser.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I just Googled Verizon app for Windows, and that sends me to the Windows Store.
Okay.
I don't think it's as simple as store.windows.com. That would be too simple.
No, it's microsoft.com/en.us for U.S. English /store.
Okay. You've given me some pointers. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but if you just type Verizon app for Windows, you'll get there. And none of them say Windows 7. So, to quote one of my favorite movies, prepare for disappointment.
There
Thank
is...
you, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
I did find the Verizon Cloud app that says it works with Windows 7. So that would let you use the Verizon Cloud Drive to share files between your devices. So it depends on what you're looking for in an app.
Right.
And probably, typically with a cell phone app, it tells you how much data you've used on your cell phone plan. With the desktop app, it lets you monitor your phone calls and things like that.
Right. Right. For all of you diehards who are deeply in lust with Windows 7 or running very old desktops that can't move up, you're getting farther and farther behind. And I hate to tell you that. But it's true. The things like apps don't work and often don't work. And as time goes on, more and more of the world is moving to apps, particularly with the new Windows 10S, which is the student version of Windows, which you can't load anything that doesn't come from the Windows Store.
Which is theoretically safer than a random download on the web.
Which is why they're trying to push it down your throat, which is why they do it that way. It's the same. Apple does the same thing. Their phones theoretically don't use anything but Apple. You can sideload some things on Android and et cetera. But generally speaking, Apple and Android and Google Chrome and Windows prefer you to use the apps that are in their stores. It gives them a better handle on quality control. And B, it means if you buy it, you're buying it through them. They get a piece of the action. as an Italian, that resonates with me nicely. But in general, Windows 7 has been left out of all of that.
In the Windows 7 days, you went to a store and bought a box with a CD in it.
I remember those. I remember CDs.
And before that, it was floppy disks.
Who was asking me last week, you don't use DVDs anymore? Not so much.
Hardly any computer comes with a DVD player anymore.
Right.
It's easy to download from the internet.
Right. And there's, you know, some of my, certainly my entire run of Doctor Who from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
That's all on VHS.
I have a few of those as well that I just can't bring myself to throw out. But I have those, of course, on DVD. But I don't really play them anymore. I go to one of the streaming services and stream. We were talking earlier about The Tick, which is going to be on...
next week, I think.
No, yesterday, I think, on Amazon. I haven't finished The Defenders yet, but The Tick is going to be on. If you want the old Tick, the one with the real Tick, Patrick Warburton... That's on Crackle.
He's a producer on the new one, though, so
it's
okay.
It's okay. That's exactly right. And I do like Peter Serafinowicz. I really do like him a lot.
Yep.
So that's not really the issue. The issue is that Patrick Warburton is the Tick.
Yep.
But he's... excuse me. I beg your pardon. And then, of course, there's the animated show, The Mad Bomber, What Bombs at Midnight, the Midnight... Bomber, come to me. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Tim from Webster, New York. Hi, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Perfect timing with this apps subject matter. I've had a smartphone for about a year and a half. I'm pretty familiar with it and everything. But what I've never understood is what really is exactly an app and how it can be compared to something like software that you download onto your laptop. If you guys could just discuss the difference between that and how an app, what is an app that you would use on your phone as compared to what you would use on your laptop, all that stuff. And thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thanks.
Sure. I was going to mention that. App is just short for application,
right?
Because computer people are lazy.
Right.
An application is too many syllables. So an application is the same on any platform. It just, when you go to get an app, you have to get it for the platform you're running. So if you're running the Android platform, you'd go to Google Play Store. If you're running the iOS platform, you go to Apple's App Store. And now both Microsoft and Apple have app stores for their own computers, the Microsoft App Store, the Mac App Store, in what traditionally, as we mentioned earlier, you used to go to the store, buy a box with applications in it. In fact, I was just thinking, the switch from floppy to CD, for me, came with Microsoft Word, I think it was version 4, came on 75 floppies.
Yep.
Or one CD.
And always floppy 74 died.
Right, and you'd have to start over again.
Right.
Yeah. So, and there's kind of an interesting argument between application and program. Generally speaking, especially when you're talking to a programmer, the program is the actual code that you write, and the application is the thing that runs to perform the task you want to do.
Right.
But for years, you know, we heard it talked application program, and that's way too many syllables.
Right. So basically, the difference between an app and a program is the platform it runs on.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Both of them are a file that you download that contains instructions on something that the product will do. But on a computer, you call it a program, and on a phone, you call it an app.
Yeah.
But they're essentially the same thing. The extensions that you add on to Chrome or Firefox are the same thing.
Yeah. But we call those extensions because they're extending the functionality of an existing app,
right,
rather than being a standalone app.
Right.
So hopefully that's clear as mud.
I hope that's clear as mud.
Clear as mud, yeah.
All right, our next caller is this Gary?
Andy?
Andy.
Yeah, Andy.
Andy from Brockport. Andy, what's up?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a Dell Inspiron computer. And first of all, I can't figure out whether I have Windows 10 or Windows 8 or Windows 7. How would I know that?
The easiest way, I think, is to... hold on. Sorry. I'm having
Typing problems. If you go to control panels and system.
There you are.
One of the things it will do is tell you what version of the system you're running.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see.
The first
system.
Thing, the
yeah,
first.
One, yeah, right, right. Yeah. Okay.
There you go. So that'll tell you what, which, and what are you running?
Your name is.
Typically, that also tells you how much RAM you have installed, what processor you have.
Yeah, so this is a, it seems like Dell put a lot of extra stuff on here.
Well, they're Dell, yeah.
Yeah, so I did go to settings, and it doesn't tell me here, so I got a bunch of other categories
well, in
here.
Settings,
about,
you...
I guess about would be the one. So I have Windows 10, good. Yeah. I know that now. But the problem is I have a my wireless network, which is built into the computer, and my hardwire network, which is built into the computer, both have stopped working. I've tried to download drivers. I've tried to do repairs. Every once in a while, it'll work. And then, of course, it'll stop working again.
Do you have other devices that are still on the network?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not the router. It's in the computer. Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes. No, it's not the router. All my other stuff works. It's just, and this is a tower. You know, I wanted to get a tower and just have a tower as a main computer. I do have a Chromebook, by the way, so I do have that.
But, and that's still working, and you can get online with that, no problem.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What model of Inspiron is this?
Yes, I know that too. Let's see, is it right here? That information's on my Chromebook and the.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It's a 3847.
3847.
3847.
Okay, do you know how old it is?
It's about 2 years old.
Yeah, and it didn't originally come with Windows 10, right?
No, it was upgraded. I think it came with Windows 7 originally.
Yep. Okay, what you might need to do, and you're lucky in this that you have a Dell.
Okay.
You can go to Dell's website and put in your serial number.
Okay,
the hardware serial number.
I have that right in front of me.
Excellent. You can go to their website
Dell,
and under...
Because Dell sometimes calls that the service tag number.
It could be the service tag, whatever.
I use the service tag number.
You go to their website and under support, you put in that number, and it will give you a list of drivers for your hardware.
Exactly.
So
and
I would
I've
suggest
done that too.
And you've downloaded the Windows 10 versions of those drivers.
Yeah, well, maybe not. So I need to make sure I get the Windows 10 version. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the problem. The Windows 10, the Windows 7, the Windows 8 versions are all different.
Yeah, sure, of course. I
and
understand.
They'll work until they stop.
Okay. Yeah, because in here it actually, I believe it even says, and I can't tell for sure exactly which one it is. It says version 10, and then it says version 7 for the Ethernet controller. So, you know, I'll have to figure out how to make it or verify that it's Windows 10.
Right, and the Dell Inspiron site should tell you.
Yeah, it says view all updates available for, and on my computer it picked Windows 7. That's interesting.
Well, you're right.
It should ask, it's possible for it to ask what system you're running. And your system will tell it.
Luckily, you can change the OS.
And you can change the OS, and so I can change that to say Windows 10, and then it shows me all of the updates. Just for Windows 10.
Okay.
Right. And right. And that's what you want. You want to make sure that you're downloading the Ethernet driver for both wired and wireless, right? For Windows 10. For your specific machine. And that's what going there and putting in the service tag number or the serial number and then making sure you're on the Windows 10 page will let you do.
And it may not hurt to download all the updates, the BIOS update, the chipset updates.
Right, download the BIOS update, the chips. Every update that they will let you update, download it. And it read, and if you want to, print out the instructions for each of those.
Yes.
And make sure you follow them step by step by step.
Okay. Now, what is the possibility that the built-in Ethernet driver or the Ethernet board, the hardware, has just basically crapped out?
It's not impossible. Every one of these devices has a life.
Have you tried a different Ethernet cable just in case?
Absolutely. Yes, I've tried multiple Ethernet cables. I actually have been wireless since the last 6 months. So I actually dragged it over to the router and plugged it in. And I had connection for a little bit, and then just immediately dropped out.
Yeah, the odds that both the Ethernet failed and the Wi-Fi failed at the same time are very low.
But the odds that the drivers were the wrong ones is very high.
Yeah.
Good. So, no, this is great.
And I've let's face it.
Meaning to call you guys for probably the 6 months I've been here.
Yeah.
And never got around to it. So.
And let's face it, this is a free fix if it works.
Yes.
You know, if it doesn't, you've lost an afternoon, but not any money. And
right.
if you need to move on to another laptop or whatever, whatever, you know you've exhausted the free options.
Yeah, so okay, let's say I get all the right drivers, it still doesn't work. Can I buy a new network card for something like a Dell?
No, generally not.
Wait,
you can buy an external.
He said desktop.
Oh, it's a desktop.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you have...
Oh, yes,
okay,
yes, you can.
Then the next step, you have to know what kind of slots your computer has.
Sure.
So you get the right kind of network card.
But, yeah, you can just buy a network card, drop it in.
Or a USB one might be easier, you're about to say. A USB Ethernet card.
Right. That's right, it's a desktop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A USB Ethernet, they have those now, huh?
Oh, yeah, they do. And either one would work. I actually have a very old, actually, Dell USB Ethernet card that I... just for the heck of it, dropped into a laptop and to see what would happen. It worked.
Oh, that's good. That's real easy. So that USB Ethernet card would be wireless and hardwire too?
Well, you can get either one.
Okay.
Usually not both in one box.
Right,
so,
right, because that's just large for a USB device.
Sure.
Right.
And what about the speed of a USB Ethernet card? Is it as fast as hardwire?
Yes and no. The maximum speed that most people get out of wireless is 27 megabits per second.
Mm-hmm.
USB, depending on which version you have, is around that.
Okay.
Give or take, depending again on which version you have.
Okay.
And how they've wired it in.
And that computer should have at least USB 2 on it.
It should have
USB 2. Probably not USB 3.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think USB 3, but most likely, two. The last question. Now, I'm downloading things to my Chromebook and putting them on a thumb drive and bringing them over. And I'm trying to make sure that it is for the, computer, the desktop. But that's okay, right?
Right.
Okay, good.
Right. You can do it. Yeah. However you get them over to that machine is fine.
Okay, good. Well, again, you guys have been great. Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Very much.
Yep. And by the way, if it's USB 2, that's 480 megabits per second, so you should be fine.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray. No, Dave Enright. Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. I'm going to go soak my hat. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I will say, I don't think he ever did a better character than Bob Wheeler. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How's it going today?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, we're hanging in there. The gentleman who called and wanted to know about apps for Win 7.
Yeah.
Not to sound old-fashioned here or anything, but he doesn't need an app. He's got a browser. All he has to go is www.verizonwirelessallinword.com, bookmark it, log into it and say, remember me. Then he goes into his browser and hits the bookmark, and he's there.
Yep. Right.
And technically, that's a web app.
It's a web app.
Okay.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There's about a million.
Head on a wall looking for an app someplace. The tools are right there.
Yep. The reality is that there's a million different ways to do exactly the same thing these days, and whether you call it an app or a web app or an application or a program or an extension or a whoop-de-doo, I don't really care. Generally speaking, it's all essentially the same code, as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, about half the extensions on Chrome, and I'm sure it's the same thing in Safari, just take you to the web app anyway.
Many of them, yeah.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There's an infinite number of ways to skin that cat.
And then you can save that bookmark as an icon on your desktop to take you back there anytime you need to.
Yep.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I was driving in the car listening, and it was like, why is he beating himself up like this?
Right. Sometimes we get a little narrow focus on something like that. All right, thanks, Andy.
No problem.
Have fun. Yeah, the number of ways that we can do that is kind of astonishing. We have, and they're all the same thing, you know, whatever version you put them on or whatever you do that.
It's a common core code base, and then you put the graphical interface elements for whichever OS you're building it for on top of that.
Right. All right, our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, another Windows 10 type question.
Sure.
So, you know, I did migrate, like many, what many did, from Windows 7 to 10.
Right.
And I've noticed increasingly that the machine slows down. The longer it's running, the more programs have been running, switching from one program to the next. The machine tends to slow down to the point where it comes to almost a complete stop, and I have to reboot it or at least close out the browser and restart it again. Now, I'm wondering, was there something about going from 7 to 10, did that increase the memory requirements of the system? And can you give me what percentage would that have been approximately?
It's not a percentage. It's the number of gigs.
Microsoft says it only needs 1 gigabyte of RAM.
Right.
In 32-bit or 2 gig on 64-bit. They are lying horribly.
They're actually technically correct.
Technically, Windows will run.
Which is the best kind of correct.
That kind of correct, yep.
It'll run badly.
Yeah, run.
But you measure.
And you can't run anything else either.
Right, and you measure response time with a calendar. But it will work. It will run. And as far as those of us who run it on a regular basis is concerned, the minimum is 4 gig. If you want to use it all day, switching apps, blah, 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 you should have 8 gig.
And part of that is because, in addition to programmers not liking long syllables, they sometimes don't have time to optimize their code to make it run faster.
Nobody optimizes anymore.
And new computers are coming with 8 gigs minimum these days.
Yeah. Right.
And so we don't need to optimize our code because just throw more RAM at it.
So if you're running, let's say, Chrome, and you've got, say, 4 or 5 tabs open, that's going to be enough to possibly slow it down even more.
Well, particularly older versions of Chrome, absolutely. I regularly run 5 or 6 on my Chromebook, which only has 4 gigs of RAM, and I have run up to 32. But I could see the lag then. But this is the latest version, yada, 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 yada.
I just heard about, it was on Security Now, they were talking about Firefox is trying to do the same thing to optimize memory and work better with lower memory. And Mozilla has a suite that they have 1,900 tabs open.
Nice.
And it takes about 15 minutes for Firefox to launch.
Yeah.
The new version of Firefox coming will take less than a minute.
Nice. What?
I use Firefox a lot, but I finally did switch over to Chrome. I just found the performance to be a lot better.
In general, it is.
And they leapfrog each other. Each new version tries to be faster than the other browsers to make you either switch back or don't switch away.
Right. I like using Firefox because it's a non-profit type organization, et cetera, and I like to support them, but you know I've got to get the performance. So,
And ironically, Google is a major contributor to the Mozilla Foundation.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So if you have less than 4 gig of RAM, I would up it at least to 4 if you can, depending on your machine, to 8.
I have 4.
Then
it's an older machine. It's a 2011 ThinkPad.
Oh, yeah. I have actually a 2010 ThinkPad, and it eventually got so slow I just put Linux on it, and it runs great now. But it was just ridiculous. Yeah. It's not designed for a newer operating system. It's that simple. Because there's way more to it than just the amount of RAM and everything else. A lot of it has to do with the processor and the architecture inside the processor and how many simultaneous threads it can run, and et cetera. I mean, you get way into the weeds at that point, but the fact is that unless the operating system and the processor suite are built for each other, you're going to find slowness.
Okay. Well, maybe time for either a memory upgrade or a new laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thanks for all your help.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I've got a Windows 10 laptop with 8 gig of RAM, and it's none too fast. You know, it really is not. It's fast enough to do the job I need it to do, but that's about all. Nothing more than that. All right, our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Hi, Gerd, what's up?
I have a track phone, flip phone.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about upgrading to a smartphone.
Yeah.
What would you suggest would be a good, reasonable priced, you know, larger screen and all that stuff?
Yeah, it depends on what it is you're going to do with it. If you're going to do a lot of web stuff and a lot of surfing and a lot of looking things up and yada, 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 you want a lot of RAM, you want a big screen, you want a lot of storage, you can take a lot of pictures. But in general...
Might as well go for that $800 Galaxy 8.
Get that $800, $900.
$900 Galaxy 8.
$900 Galaxy 8.
I thought that would be the Galaxy 9.
Right. Right. No, the price should always be higher than the number.
Okay.
Times 100. The basic idea, I think, for you would be something in the $300 or $400 range should suit you fine. I mean, let's face it, you're coming from a flip phone.
Yeah.
So right now, you're not doing a lot of that stuff anyway.
No.
So doing a little bit, you know, what we would think of, those of us who bought those $900 phones would think of as not enough, is still going to be an awful lot to you. If you can do text messaging and take pictures and surf the web and et cetera, even if it's not instantaneous response time, you're going to be happy.
Okay.
Right?
And one of the nice things you can do is go to the store and try a bunch of them out. And typically the store displays will have internet access, and so you can try surfing the web, you can try running apps, and see which one feels responsive enough for you.
Right.
As you go up the price line.
Right. It also depends on your eyesight as to whether you need a big screen or a little screen. It depends on your wallet as to whether you want to spend $200 or $500. It depends on who your carrier is as to which of those phones is going to be available through that carrier. So my suggestion is go to each one of the phone, go to your carrier store, and they have a bunch of phones there.
Okay.
And take a look at them. You know, this is a fairly major purchase. It's not car sized, but it's a fairly major purchase. So spending a little time at it to get it right is not a bad idea. So I would go to the store and look at each of the devices that they have. Take a look at what they have in terms of RAM and in terms of processor speed, in terms of all that stuff. You know, more is better, but enough is enough. Think about what you're going to want to run, the kind of apps you're going to want to run. Look through the App Store if you're getting an Apple phone. Look through the Play Store if you're getting a Google phone, an Android phone, and that'll help you determine the types of things you want to do and the number of the things you want to do, and that'll tell you how much space you're going to need in that phone. And so you can get a better decision when you go to look whether you need a 4-gig phone, an 8-gig phone, whatever. Does that make sense? That makes sense? Good.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
It's like the perennial, you know, religious questions: which phone should I buy? Which computer should I buy? Which tablet should I buy? In fact, we're joking about this with my boss the other day. The answer used to be ask your friends, so you can ask them for help.
Right.
And the answer, you know, the friend is, I'm not going to tell you because I don't want you to call me at 3 a.m. with a question. So that's what we're here for. You can call us on Saturdays with questions.
But not at 3 a.m. I should open up a service. The 3 a.m. phone call charge $150 yeah. bucks a minute, but still.
Drunk text from last night.
Right. Can I get a 900 number?
Yeah.
yeah, but and I get it. It's so frustrating when you have a problem and you know somebody who probably has the answer, and it's 2 a.m. and what are you going to do? I always feel bad. People are asking me a lot of questions on Facebook, and I try to have one place that I don't answer people's computer questions. Just one place out of the entire internet, and that place was Facebook. Now I don't know what I'm going to do. I hate to say no to people, but cheese and crackers. 1 minute I'd like to, but and on the other hand, I understand they have this need, they have this problem, and they assume that I will be able to help them. Sometimes I can, and it's hard. It's a hard choice to make, and I get that. I do. But it's frustrating to have that issue and know that there's a fix out there and not be able to get at it when you need it,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, is always 3 a.m. or Sunday afternoon when nobody's home and nobody's doing anything that they normally would do. We wanted to talk earlier. We were talking USB, and the USB 2 is 480 megabits per second.
It might only theoretical.
Be right. It might. It could only be 60 megabits per second. USB 3 can handle 5 gigabits per second, or right. 640 megabits per second. Again,
yep.
it's because it's not just the speed of that connection; it's the speed of everything behind that connection,
right?
As well. All right. Well, that music tells me you've wasted 2 more hours of your lives listening to this nonsense. We want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Really, call earlier next week. I'm serious. You can't call at 1:56 and expect to get in. And I apologize for that, but it just can't be done. We're done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who did yeoman service here today. But he's not leaving because he's going to stick around for George, who will play the best German music you'll hear all week. We will be back to see you next week with probably Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 56 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Why, that's right. It's Soundbites. I'm the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.